Right, you are very welcome back to the programme. Just to remind you, our email, comments at highlandradio.com, WhatsApp and text to 086 60 25000. I think I'm joined now by Louise McCormack, AI consultant and doctoral researcher in Trustworthy AI. Good morning to you, Louise.
Good morning.
Great to have you on the programme. AI now, there's a broad adoption of it, I think, amongst the public. It's very accessible and it's very integrated now as well. We are starting to see, you know, people being have access to the likes of Sora 2 or, stuff from Grok or third-party apps, where AI is becoming... I find it, unless you're employing common sense, almost hard visually to distinguish it from what's real. And we're starting to see it sort of invade our presidential election, for an example.
It's something that's really come to the forefront. AI, of course, and technology in general, it's something that we've had in our society and something that's been creeping up on us. I think the very blatant examples of things like the deepfake of Catherine Connolly, for example, has made people more aware of it and more fearful of it. But realistically, this has been a real problem in our society since, you know, before Cambridge Analytica, which is the data scandal about how data was being used to influence elections. And that was being done since 2010. So that didn't stop in 2010 just because, you know, Cambridge Analytica scandal came out a couple of years later. This has been a huge problem. It's very obvious now to people, but it actually has been a huge problem for more than 10 years.
Yeah, I just was looking at ChatGPT launched its new browser. So the whole idea is that, you know, you've got your phone in your pocket, but also it's keeping track of your search history and all that type of stuff. And, you know, someone more intelligent than me once said that, you know, if something is free, you know, you're the product. And we all want the latest stuff and to have access to our latest stuff. It seems actually there's more data being scraped now than less data.
The data has always been scraped. The idea of like one company coming out and being, you know, and saying that they're collecting your data. All companies are buying the data from each other on you. There's a huge market. There's been a huge market where people are buying this data on you and profiling you and cross-referencing it. Thanks to things like the GDPR, companies like, for example, you know, social media companies and all these companies who are collecting your data on the apps, those companies have to put into their privacy policies if they're buying other data on you. And they all will say, we're buying other data on you. So, you know, the idea of collecting across various, you know, things on your phone, this is already happening when you're going on various websites and cookies and so on. The data has already been collected and it's already been shared between these companies because they're buying it up from each other.
And personally, I don't mind it. Like, I'm conscious of what I'm sharing with Google, right, and what others are, but I find it very useful for maps, for an example, real-time traffic congestion, etc. So it's happening all the time and there are benefits. And it's not something, I don't really feel I've got anything to hide. But back to the AI and the image generation and the video generation, I mean, the jump between Sora 1 and 2 was huge, and God knows what's to come next. And some of the video Grok's outputting is just really quite remarkable. How soon is it before we're not going to be really able to tell the difference, or enough people aren't going to bother researching to it becomes a very, very significant problem?
It's back to, we can already make these kind of videos. Of course, it's easier and there's more of them. But the problem is not making the videos, because the videos can always be made. Like, they can be made by Hollywood, they can be made by anybody. The videos can always be made. The problem is who's taking those videos, taking clips of them, profiling individuals and deciding to show them to those people at periods over time to influence what that person thinks. Uh-huh. Because a video just can exist on a local computer. I can have a video on my computer of anything. I can have a video, a deep fake of Catherine Connolly on my computer. But what good is that? It's only good if a million people see it or if a couple of hundred thousand people see it. And specifically the people who are on the fence about voting, you know, whichever way. Mm. So the videos in of themselves aren't so much the problem as the platforms that are deciding who to show them to.
Well, that's
and
it.
We
though.
Have no visibility
yeah, but,
over this.
Yeah, and we have the AI Act, which is coming in later next year. Okay, but you know, the social media is the Wild West. Even companies that were pretty tight on misinformation, disinformation, your likes of your Facebooks, etc., they've had to roll back now because of the trailblazing in this space that X is doing. You know, verifications that should actually be happening now in Ireland simply aren't happening. And these companies are based, you know, far away, and then people have VPNs and they can circumnavigate this stuff in any case. So, you know, how is this going to be policed? Is it policeable?
So the AI Act, part of it is actually already in force. Article 5, which is the part that prevents the worst of manipulations. It prevents things like mass manipulation of vulnerable groups, including youths. That's been enforced since the 2nd of February. So in terms of policing it, I would argue that there are many platforms that are using AI algorithms to materially distort and cause harm to vulnerable groups. I would argue that that is already happening. So how can we police it? That's been enforced since February. This will have to be argued out in the courts. People will have to take, you know, class action suits, I think parent groups and so on, and say my kids are being materially harmed.
Yes, but people have been very careful to hook that wagon to the free speech wagon. And we've seen this in America. We know the head of X, for an example. We know what his thoughts on certain issues are. We know then the content that he pushes to certain people. And then we know the influence that, that can have, for an example, on the UK government. Let me put you know, so like without talking about which marginalised groups I'm talking about, I don't see any evidence that that can actually be controlled, because it's global now and it's at the whim of an individual if need be.
So platforms like we'll just say like Facebook, TikTok and so on, for many years now, there have been studies done to show that they are causing harm to youths. Like you don't need an academic study to say that these platforms are causing harm to youths in our society. So the option that we have now in Europe with the regulation is that we can start building platforms that adhere to that and that don't cause harm. And then we will have the option to start moving towards those platforms. Mm. And that's the trend that I see happening. I see we can't control them, you know.
Yeah, but I think an example of that with respect, though, Louise, would be Blue Sky. And it just becomes an echo chamber of the left with extreme people on the left in that too. And as soon as someone of the left steps out of line, I'll give Keira Knightley as an example, all of a sudden it becomes as toxic a place as what it professes to be the opposite of. So I can't see this euphoric sort of middle ground space ever emerging.
There is a middle ground to be had. And I would definitely agree with you. I think the left have done a very, very poor job of being inclusive. And exactly what you just said with this example, you say one thing wrong, you know, someone with good intentions who agrees with a lot of liberal values, like they want people to have access to education and healthcare. They want a lot of the things that people on the left want. They want freedoms for people. They believe in, you know, fairness and things like that. And then somebody with that good attitude and good heart says one thing, and all of a sudden they're called, you know, this or that. Or, you know, I think a very good example of it is that the left has been very, I guess, tight about not allowing people to talk about immigration. If somebody says something about immigration, they say, well, you're a racist. And that's not necessarily always the case at all. People have problems with how the country is doing it. And I think that's a big problem. And that divisiveness is preyed on by algorithms who force people down these funnels. It's the polarization that we have is a direct consequence of that. The inability for people to talk. And I would definitely, like, I would be definitely very liberal, very left wing. And it upsets me every time that I see people who I, you know, share a lot of opinions with cut somebody out or cut somebody off or tell somebody that they're kind of nearly make out that someone is uninformed. Mm. Just for having one differing opinion, and that complete stonewalling of any ability to have a conversation, that is something that's happened because of algorithms, because of recommended algorithms.
But there's also we are a commodity, we're a product, and it doesn't matter really if you're trying to make money, if you're of the right or of the left or wherever you are, if I can dominate, you know, your attention, then so be it. Also, too, Louise, what really does concern me, and we have seen it already, but we're going to see more of it, right, is individuals, you know, not movie stars, not corporations, not what have you, me or you, being completely misrepresented in artificial intelligence. And, you know, I think I said it a little earlier, a lie travels far quicker than the truth. You know, that's where where you can't necessarily research as such. That's where the reality versus the AI blur is really going to be a problem. And we've seen it with, I've spoken to families of young girls who have had, you know, their face superimposed in inappropriate ways. And this was way before where we're at now.
Yep.
Is there any way to police that, do you think, Louise?
Well, the next part of the AI Act that's coming in next year, you will have to, if you're making a piece of software that is generating AI content, no matter what that is, they have to show that it's been generated by AI. So that is a new requirement that's coming in, that it has to be, you know, how difficult will it be for that to happen in real time? So there's two things that people do with the content. One is that it goes on recommender algorithms and it gets pushed out through algorithms. And those algorithms are responsible for the spreading of that content. And the second thing is that it gets directly sent to somebody. So it's something like on a WhatsApp message, you know, things like that. And the people who are sending that are responsible for that content. And that is where there's a real harm for that personal content. And I think, you know, and I've been working in this space for a couple of years. I've been working with AI actually for many years, for maybe 7 or 8 years. But I've really just been looking at it for my PhD on how we can evaluate the impact of it just over the last 3 years. And where I've come to in terms of, like, I've actively been building a tool to evaluate the ethics and the impact of an AI system. So that's all I've been doing. And what I've come to as a conclusion is that you cannot replace core human functions, such as the publisher of a newspaper who decides what content people see, which is an algorithm. You cannot replace that function safely with an algorithm.
But if you cannot replace
them with an algorithm safely.
If you have a national newspaper that's, you know, very anti-opposition, or if you have Fox News or that's very sort of pro-Trump, for an example, is that not an algorithm? Effectively,
no, that's a person, and you have a choice then to go and buy whichever newspaper you want to buy. That's your free choice, and you can say, you know, I like this journalist. I agree with that.
Yeah, I get you. Okay,
and I'm going to go have a look at that. What's happening on algorithms is far worse. It's nudging. They can profile you in real time, understand your politics, and influence you in a way that is impossible to do from a journalist.
Yeah.
The lack of transparency and the manipulation that can happen on algorithms.
Yeah, and one thing that worries me.
And anybody.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you might get a teenager who's feeling mentally vulnerable and they might search one thing on TikTok, but they will be bombarded with very poor mental advice potentially. Because
it's this assumption as well that they don't even need to search something. They just need to go and start scrolling.
I know, but
just based on the pauses that they do.
And I'm sort of
it comes back to it's not them. It's not a rabbit hole.
No,
it's not them directing it.
Of course, no. But my point is, I'm capturing that in with search as well. To be honest with you, the point being, it's the fact that the algorithm is set up to target regardless. There's no ethics there whatsoever. But listen, it's been very interesting speaking to you, Louise. Thank you so very much for your time. I've just cut her off just as she was about to say something. My apologies. Maybe we might check back with Louise just in case there was a piece of work that she wanted us to direct you to or what have you. That was Louise McCormick, AI consultant and doctoral researcher in Trustworthy AI. How often do you use AI? Like, I'm using it all of the time, not through work, but just generally through, like, I'm finding myself interacting with it multiple times a day. I can't trust it for work because of the sources it draws from. So you could end up getting some sort of depending on what platform you use, a particularly liberal or a particularly conservative or what have you. But just in general stuff, general day-to-day life, I find that I'm using it all of the while. And now, very soon, if you've got your Google's home speakers, Gemini will be integrated, their AI software will be integrated into them. So how you communicate, you know, with those devices will be very much more conversational right in your house. So if you're not using your phone in that way, you certainly will be with your smart devices in the not too distant future, where they're, as I say, communicating with you in a almost human way. Okay, is it scary? I don't know. What do you think? 086 60 25,000. I don't worry for me. I worry for those that come behind me, that the world that they're growing up and or being born into. Dara Nolan's a multimedia reporter with the Irish Independent. He joins me now. Good morning, Dara.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. Last night was the second night of riots in Dublin, centering on the City West Hotel. And Gardaí have been really quite, you know, active and vocal about what they believe to be going on.
Yeah, they have indeed. Language from the guards that I don't think we've really seen in the past, making it very clear that they feel most of the people that were there both on Tuesday night and last night were there to cause trouble, were there to commit acts of violence, and also pointing out as well that an overwhelming amount of the people that are there are young men and young male juveniles who are being described as kind of recreational protesters, is a term I've seen bandied about this morning. And the guards just making very clear what they feel is going on, and also issuing warnings to people saying, if you're planning to go to City West and planning to cause trouble, maybe don't, maybe reconsider, and also that for younger people that it may affect your future as well. So what we're hearing coming from the guards is certainly very very forceful, yeah.
I think most of us have watched quite a bit of footage, be it live or otherwise, Dara, and you were out on the streets. How would you frame what you saw?
Last night, I would say it was tense, but not quite as chaotic as Tuesday. There were smaller crowds outside City West last night, and guards were taking a different approach than Tuesday. So on Tuesday night, when we were at the scene, what we saw was a huge bottleneck of hundreds of people that had built up in the driveway leading to the entrance to the City West complex. And that's where guards set up their barrier, at the end of that driveway, about a half a kilometre away from City West. Last night, the barriers were set up at the very front of that driveway. And what guards were actually doing from shortly before 7 o'clock was moving people along away from that main road directly across from City West, under Section 8 of the Public Order Act, and telling people that they can't congregate there. And then we had lines of guards formed at either side of that main road called Garter Lane across from City West to prevent people from getting anywhere near the complex. And then later on, what we saw is tensions kind of flared, fireworks were being thrown towards Gardaí on that barrier. This was when a line of soft cap Gardaí were blocking the protesters. That's when armoured Gardaí with riot shields were then joining that line as well, and creating a further bit of distance between the protesters and the line of guards. There were attempts made by those protesters to breach those Garda lines, but they were unsuccessful. But again, more abuse being hurled at guards and more missiles being hurled at guards as well last night.
I think the fact that the water cannon hasn't been used either night, I don't believe it was used the night before last, you can correct me on that. Gardaí would see that as a success of the other elements. Maybe they see that as the action of last resort, not least, you know, because maybe they choose not to, but also the imagery of it and how you know, what it might sort of, the escalation of response that it might sort of talk to. Do you think they might see the fact that they haven't had to actually use that yet as an operational success?
Yes, absolutely. And the water cannon was on site on Tuesday evening when the protest was much larger and more violent and really descended into a riot. The water cannon actually wasn't on scene at all last night. It wasn't deployed, nor was it used. And look, that is a testament to, I think, first of all, what the guards have said all along, which is that their response to any unrest in City West, it will be robust, but also proportionate as well. And look, there were hundreds of Gardaí on scene last night, I believe 300 in all. The air support unit was overhead. We saw the Garda helicopter overhead frequently throughout last night. You know, we had 150 uniformed Gardaí and 120 public order officers as well. So they would have seen that response as a success, I think. And the use of those barriers along the main road there in City West and making sure the crowds couldn't gather in the way that they did on Tuesday. The situation was really handled differently, but also as well, the situation did unfold differently owing to how much smaller the crowd was last night.
I mean, obviously there are those predicting this will just continue and continue and continue. Do you think the Gardaí are hoping to sort of wait it out, more or less the numbers begin to, you know, might dwindle further as the days go on?
I think that is what they are hoping. But as well as that, I think Garda are prepared for all eventualities over the coming days. And that's what we've heard from Garda Commissioner Justin Kelly over the last day or two, and from other senior Gardaí as well, is that they're prepared for anything else that happens in City West and indeed in other locations as well, because some of the online rhetoric has kind of started going in that direction of travel as well, suggesting that if Garda resources are being pulled into City West, then maybe these people need to try and protest in other areas as well. So Garda are very much prepared for whatever comes their way, whether we see scenes similar to Tuesday night again, whether it's similar the last night, or if something else happens. So Garda are very prepared, I think.
Listen, I mean, most people, as I mentioned, have seen the videos. There's no doubt a good proportion of those that have turned up are just there because there's disorder and an opportunity to attack the Gardaí, who they probably don't like to begin with. But there are obviously concerned citizens, but many concerned citizens ride around the country, because what sparked this latest disturbance is an alleged assault of a 10-year-old girl, a vulnerable 10-year-old girl, on the grounds of City West Hotel. And people are dissatisfied with the Garda and government response to that. Obviously, people have to be careful, because this is potentially something that could go to trial, right? And people need to be careful that they're not in any way compromising justice. But, you know, do you think that anger, because this is not going to be the last story of this nature, how are the government, the Garda, going to deal with that?
It is hard to know. And I think, look, at the end of the day, there isn't a whole pile that we can say about that case. But look, people in City West are angry. And I think that can be seen in, you know, we had a much smaller protest up there on Monday evening, and those people were actually able to get all of the way onto the City West Hotel complex, and they were right at the front gate to the IPAS Centre there. So, look, there is some anger in that community, and there are people who have spoken to the media in recent days as well who have said that the presence of the IPAS Centre there at all has changed Sagart Village as a community to an extent as well. And the pressure, I think, is on now. The pressure is on the Justice Minister, Jim O'Callaghan, and on the government to ensure that issues around immigration are handled in the way that they ought to be.
Darren Nolan, thank you. Dara, is a multimedia reporter at the Irish Independent. Now, to some of your comments before we take a quick break. Did Greg say there wasn't support for those affected by CRESA? The HSE supplied a dedicated social worker. No, actually, I praised the response. I praised the response to by the HSE, and in fairness, the government, who put resources immediately in place. That was the correct way to do it. I mean, obviously, there's going to be those that maybe think it didn't go far enough, but no, I use that as a good example as to how maybe we could deal with the trauma, and I'm not conflating the two issues, but the trauma and the damage to young people and their parents as well, and their grandparents. So no, I didn't say there wasn't support. I actually used CRESA as an example of how we can react when we are motivated to do so. A caller says, how do you fill out the house value property tax form if your house is, they say mica, but, you know, defective concrete? Good question. There's a lot of people out there in the same boat. You see, until such time, and I'm open to correction here, until such time you're on the scheme, you don't really have defective concrete, I would imagine, in the eyes of property tax, if you know what I'm saying. You could try and make a point and undervalue it, but, you know, someone could have a crack in their house and say, well, my house might have defective concrete, here is my valuation. So there's someone out there that's going to know the exact answer to that, but I would imagine that your property tax valuation would only be influenced or affected if you actually were officially on the scheme. But please correct me if I'm wrong. Don't take that as factual information. That would just be the common sense determination. Hi, Greg. Thank you for mentioning the downgraded homeowners again with regard to the mental health impacts. It's so frustrating to be stuck in neutral with no timeline or hope and constant delays and denials. I appreciate your ongoing coverage of the entire crisis and your support. Listen, that's our value here. That's why I turn up for work, to be honest with you, to be able to not take sides, but give people a platform to speak about these types of issues, but also, you know, hold those that make these decisions to account if there are flaws there. That's the only reason I do this. I've been watching Deputy Ward the past few weeks presenting in the Dáil, and it was empty. He was speaking to 10 to 15 people on his side of the room. No point speaking to people who already agree with what he's saying. Well, unfortunately, you have to talk about pay rises to fill the Dáil out, or there has to be a vote of no confidence. That being said, whether people are there to hear it or not, it's not insignificant that these words are recorded on the record that are there for ever, effectively. So I get where you're coming from, but it's not completely futile either. It's all good talking about people being pushed out of the system, but there are people who have been told they aren't eligible at all and can't even get on the system in the first place. I know. I am a council tenant and waiting on a test to buy council housing. My husband is sick and the test has taken almost a year, so time is running out. Every time I go into the council office, I get fobbed off. Right, so you're looking to purchase the house, but you're waiting on the council, the vendor, to do the test. Is that the scenario? A caller says, our house was falling down and my husband died during the process. The stress of trying to navigate through the rebuilding in our 70s was so huge that I firmly believe it contributed to his heart attack and death. The house is now rebuilt and I'm living in it alone and I hate it. The mental stress of what we've been through is huge and my life savings of €30,000 is gone on the rebuild. And that is a familiar story. And thank you so much for calling us and sharing that. And I'm so, so sorry for your loss. And, you know, I'm sure if your hubby was here with you still, maybe you could, you know, get over the loss of the savings and love the house because you love it with him. But I think I know exactly where you're at. And the house would feel empty, you know, not just physically, but also emotionally, because the person that, you know, you were on this journey with is no longer with you. So I'm very sorry what you're going through. You know, I hope maybe you have a look at maybe a bit of bereavement counselling. You have an awful lot to be dealing with. But look after yourself, please, and stay in touch with us. I'm so, so sorry with what you've went through there. Everyone I talk to says they're out an extra 60 or 70 grand in rebuilding. So many of my work colleagues have gone for an outer block only because it fits into the scheme without adding any more money on it. Money they just don't have. And I mean, if I were in that boat, I think you might find yourself going down that route. Right. Keep your calls, comments and texts coming into us. They're very valuable because they help us. They help us and they get you your point of view out there. All right, back with more shortly. Okay, John Wilkie joins him now. Hi, John.
Yes, Greg, how are you?
I'm good. Now, you're reflecting on your past 4 years working in healthcare.
Yes.
What's your reflections? We're talking about the accessibility of the county, really, aren't we?
Yes, just it's accessibility for people with disabilities, Greg. To cut a long story short, I don't know I could go on here all day about it, but just particularly doorways, things like that, you know, stairwells, you know, people getting indoors. Even I was out the last day there with a client, you know, and just trying to get in a door, and it's just awkward. You know, you have the same sort of situation. I know the council have done a lot of work in that field, you know, and they're trying hard at it, but it's, maybe there should be some sort of an audit done on the county what buildings are not accessible.
You mean all buildings or public buildings, John?
Well, public and private. Mm. You know, if you go down the street, there is buildings you can't get into. You know, if we are to include people, you know, this inclusion, if we are to include people, you know, even people with visual impairment, disabilities, all sorts of mental health, all sorts of, it covers a big spectrum. Mm. You know, they say there's 1 in 5 now in the country, and the same in Northern Ireland, about 21%, you know, whatever. But it's just trying to make it a wee bit more accessible for folk.
I mean, obviously, there's parts of Donegal, Letterkenny, wherever you want to pick, where it's old buildings, you know, and maybe they're not designed necessarily to accommodate a modern wheelchair. I hope we're not making the same mistake that all new buildings have to have doors of a certain width, you know, that certain, you know, all floors are accessible to people with a disability. You would hope we're at least getting it right in terms of future planning. But there are ways you could incentivize people to retro fit their properties to become accessible?
Oh, yes. I think if you even look outside your own front door, that's where I start. You know, it's not accessible. I mean, I had a few issues with my own health a few years ago, and I know all about it. Being in a wheelchair, there's places you can't get up, curbs, etc. You know, even on your own doorstep. But maybe we should think, the planners and the engineers, with a new futuristic plans in Letterkenny, which is coming up.
But there's things, you see, the thing that concerns me, you also reference people who are visually impaired, right? So we can sort of look at ourselves, but we can also look at the local authority. So us, for an example, you see sandwich boards out, you see businesses with chairs at the front door, you know, you see people ignoring stop signs, you see cars parked on the footpath, you see people not looking after their overgrown hedges, you see people allowing their dog to crap on the sidewalk or the footpath, sorry, I don't know where I got sidewalk from, right? So we could actually today make the life of visually impaired people easy. You know, we don't need to widen doorways necessarily, we don't need to do this, that, and none. And I'm concerned if we don't crack that, how then can we do the bigger projects?
That's a great point. But even allowing people into the town, you know what I'm saying? I'm not going to talk about traffic today because I'm talking about it you talk about it a lot. But even people that have disabilities have money to spend. And if you can't get access to a shop or a pub or sort of a hub or a hospital or a day centre, you know what I mean? Because it ends up in poverty. So I'm not going to bother. I'm not going there today. I'm not, you know.
No, well, that's not inclusion, though, is it? That's not being part of society. No. That's being excluded.
Yes. Exactly. So, look, and I know there's Acts 2005, and there's all sorts of different legislation involved. But it's just even to think what the County Council could come up with, even with an audit, to see the buildings, to see what has to be done, and maybe they start somewhere. You know, let's make inclusion work. No. There's a good title. But look, it's just trying to make things better. When you're out with people that are blind and on wheelchairs, and I was in Sligo the last day as well, look, we could do better, you know, I think.
Yeah, but as you say, you need a bar, don't you? And the audit's where you get the bar. You sort of say, well, where are we and how can we improve?
I think the council themselves and the councillors, fair play to them, they all try very hard. Now, I have to say they're very good in Letterkenny. But we could do a bit more. We could push it a bit far. Let's push it a bit more, you know. And unless you have a disability or somebody in the house with autism or any kind of disability, you know, look, even diabetes, even getting out, getting in, arthritis, autism, there's a massive.
Well, public toilets, access to public
exactly.
Toilets.
Exactly, even around the town park.
If you're pregnant or you've got a bowel condition or stomach condition.
You know. I can see, and I do a bit of climbing there, Greg, as you know. Look, and they've done a bit of tarn down in Argyll. So that's looking good at the moment. We're waiting still for Portaloos, even a disability toilet, you know? So that's right away.
Yeah, all right. Okay, well, we'll see what people think. Thanks, John. 086 60 25,000, that's the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 07491 25,000. Your views on that, but also your lived experiences are very valuable as well. What is the reality of it? You know, like, say, for instance, there's a scheme that's just been announced whereby people would be incentivized to get tax breaks for, you know, first level property, you know, above businesses. Like, is a proviso of that they're wheelchair accessible, for an example? You know, that's a new plan, that's government money. If we're not doing things like making sure that, you know, government incentivized development is appropriate for people of all abilities, well, then we're arguably misspending public money. Now, just to let you know, on Saturday, we're broadcasting live from the Aura Leisure Centre between 12 noon and 1 p.m. The way it works with the presidential election, it's not like the locals or generals whereby there's a ton of action, loads and loads of tallies and really strong indications, because obviously this is a national vote. But we will have access to tallies down there. How complete they are remains to be seen. No pressure on the guys. But we'll certainly get a sense where Donegal's voting during that hour. Is it Catherine Connolly? Is it, I was going to say Mairead McGuinness. Is it Heather Humphreys? Is it Mr. Gavin? He's still on the ballot paper. And what about the spoiled vote protest? Well, we'll be able to get a sense of what's going on there as well. And also we'll be getting a sense of what's happening nationally as well. So I'm going to be there. Michaela Clark is going to be there reporting on the ground for us as well, getting a sense of what's happening. We will also have Dr. Joe, Dr. Joe Kelly will be joining us, and Paddy as well. He'll be joining us as well. So we'll have, why am I saying as well so much? They'll be with us to run through exactly what's happening, talk about the campaign, talking about the vote. We should get some sense of the turnout as well. So there'll be lots to chat. It's a short, sharp shock for you from 12 noon till 1 p.m. Paddy Rooney, Dr. Joe Kelly, Michaela Clark, and myself. You'll be able to watch that show as well, by the way. So if you are watching, it's always good if you can like and subscribe or share the post, help spread the love. But also you can hit the bell and it'll tell you when we're live. Be it this show or whether John Breslin's doing an interview, Tommy Rosny does lots of online stuff. Who else? Rula Bula, plenty of online stuff there. You can watch the DL debate. You can watch the score a lot of the time. Who else? Monday Night Sessions. They love to stream out live as well. Who else am I missing? I don't want to miss anyone out, but there's lots of people doing lots of great work in terms of giving you different types of content in different ways. Right, 086 60 25,000, that's the WhatsApp and text number. A caller says the government don't seem to understand how scared young women are. These young men arrive and no women with them, and some not fully checked. I don't agree with the violence, but the government are to blame for it all. That comes in from Cecilia. I think that probably sums up Jean Corrin, sorry, streams a lot as well. That sums up what a lot of people are feeling, Cecilia. You know, it's not a controversial point of view. We get it all the time. We've gotten it for quite some time. And there's not a great deal of work done to let people learn about each other. Maybe some of the, you know, is the fear always justified? Obviously not. Not all people are bad people. But what is done to try and address any of it? People are moved in en masse into one big building. It's often a building that was important to the community, so people are peed off there. People in the community are struggling themselves to get roofs over their heads, so they're peed off. They're not racist, they're just angry. They're struggling to make ends meet. The 300,000 people in ESB arrears, and then you've got lots and lots of people that have come to the country that don't even have to worry about that. You know, some groups of individuals get, you know, 600 quid towards their rent, and you're competing with them in the same rental market. You don't hate the people, but you don't feel it's fair. And then you know nothing about the people. And then, you know, you're told they're being deported if they don't have a right to be here, but they're not. That causes anger. You know, there's a lot going on there. And, you know, unless the powers that be get on top of it, it's not going to improve anytime soon. And you're not going to be able to imprison everyone. You're not going to be able to do a lot of stuff that you might think will quell it. It won't. It only adds to the anger. And these people that end up in court become heroes of sorts. On the issue of disabilities and access, Joanne joins me. Joanne, how are you getting on?
How are you, Greg?
You know, we heard John Wilkie's testimony. He works in the health area and works with people visually impaired, with a disability, those in wheelchairs. You've, through your family, you've got lived experience of this reality.
Yes, we do indeed, yeah.
It's your son, and what's his experience like in terms of access?
Well, he is a wheelchair user, and even locally in our own town, there's very little wheelchair access. And I suppose it's things that we probably wouldn't have noticed until, you know, he was in that situation himself. Even like the parking, I think, seems to be really the worst in any town you go into. You often have disabled parking spaces where there's no lowered curb. So, and maybe where... you can't get him out on one side, you have to get him out onto the main road to park in the wheelchair on the main road to get him out of the car. There's parking spaces where you have to take him out, and then there's maybe two steps to access the main road. Things like going into your local post office or your local credit union where we live, there's no lowered curbs. I took him in recently to put in some money into an account that he had got for his birthday, and had to lift him out of the wheelchair to access the counter. Local library, local pharmacy, there's steps up. You can't take a wheelchair in.
So it's not one thing, is it? And you're in a small town. This is like a barrier every which way you turn. And a lot of it could be easily overcome with just a bit of common sense, Joanne. A lot of this stuff he wouldn't experience with a few subtle changes, actually. The stuff you're talking of.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's a complete lack of common sense. You know, they put in these parking spaces, but they don't actually look at the bigger picture, you know, where you're parking and or you have they mark it as a disabled parking space, and they might have another space then in front of it. So, you know, you have no room to open a boot to get a wheelchair out or in, you know, things like that. But there's no wider access to the wheelchair space, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. And if you get out on to the road because of the high curb, how far down do you have to walk out on the road to find a gap in cars or to get a drop curb to be able to carry on with your business? Really basic stuff.
Yeah, really, really basic stuff. And that's what's so frustrating about it. And it seems to be in any town. And, you know, the lack of toilets or changing facilities is a major issue no matter where you go.
Yeah.
He obviously can't access a toilet. And, you know, he doesn't use a toilet in the conventional way.
Yes.
So he, you know, he needs a changing bench. Trying to find one, it's nearly impossible. We were recently...
Go ahead, Joanne, please.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I want to hear your experience.
No. Well, I was just going to say, we were recently abroad on holidays, and the difference over there was it was day and night. You know, no matter where you went, you had access to toilets, whether it be on beaches or in towns or anywhere. Even accessing the beach was, you didn't even have to think about it.
Yeah, whereas here, thanks to great local work, one wheelchair on one beach is a news story. You know, that's
Yeah.
And as a mom as well too, and for your son's sake, like, you just want him to have as integrated a life as possible. That's you know, there's nothing that you've said at all is about special treatment. It's literally just about him being included. That's all.
Yeah. And that's the thing that's more annoying, I think, in his case, because he's very capable and very able to do a lot of things himself.
Yeah.
And he's just he's just coming into his teenage years now, where he'll be looking to go out with friends and that sort of thing. And I mean, it's just not possible. All my other children were able to do it. They were able to go and go up the town and meet their friends, or hop on a bus and meet someone at the cinema. The way things are, that's not going to be possible for him.
Yeah, which is very difficult because, you know, I mean, obviously you're here guiding him as a young teen. But, I mean, are things going to improve when he's 25, 30, 35? Maybe when you're, God forbid, not there to assist like you're assisting right now. Do you know what I mean? Are we preparing our towns and villages for his independent living when that time comes?
Yeah, no, it's definitely not happening. And, you know, it shouldn't, as you say, it's very small things. It's a bit of common sense. It's a bit of forward thinking. It's a matter of maybe the planners taking someone who uses a wheelchair or who has, you know, the difficulties that we're talking about, and walking around with them and getting their perspective on it, rather than sitting at a computer screen and saying, oh, well, we'll put a space here and we'll put a space here.
Yeah, box ticking, saying, Rob, well, there's three parking spaces there. That's that job done. Next town, please.
Yeah, job done. Yeah.
All right, Joanne, it's frustrating because I can imagine how it must feel. You just want your son to have the same experiences as much as possible as everybody else. But even in a small area like yours, where things could be gotten right, they're not. And it was astonishing listening to you, the list of just everyday stuff able-bodied people might take for granted that your son's not able to access in the same way, and he could with the right attitude. Joanne, love to all. Thanks very much for coming on, and it's nothing like hearing the lived experience to help people understand exactly what we're talking about. So I appreciate you sharing that.
No problem, Greg. Thanks.
Okay, and best wishes to your son. Thank you very much indeed. All right, that is where we leave it for Thursday's 9 till noon show. Thank you so much to all of you for listening, and those of you who watch the show. It is very much appreciated. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 with the Friday panel and loads of other stuff to keep you informed and entertained for 3 hours. So for me, Greg Hughes, Caroline and Katie, have a great day.